century was all the same. I was under the sky, no new horizons. Maybe there is no one else to be.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Campbell's Footballs podcast with me, Dr. Grant Campbell. Now, I'm really excited to have a very special guest on the show. I'm delighted to be joined by a very famous person from the Northern Irish Football League. He's been very much involved with a lot of things behind the scenes at NIFL for the last few years, but he's really had a very decorated career in the Northern Irish Football League as well. It's the one and only Stephen Mills. Stephen, a warm welcome to the show.
Grant, thanks for having me. You certainly talked me up, probably a little bit more than I certainly deserve, but it's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Being involved with the Northern Irish Football League, there is never a dull moment, is there? And the 23-24 season has been no different, hasn't it?
No, exactly, Grant. I've been involved, been working for NIFL for over 10 years, and as soon as you think you've seen it all, something else crops up and catches you. This year is probably no different. Lots of excitement, lots of twists and turns. And as we enter the last month, I can't see that changing.
And of course, we are just in the guts of the split. Obviously, that was just announced very recently, the fixtures. I mean, it really is going to be such a titanic end of the season at the top of the table, but also at the bottom end too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think whenever we restructured the schedule and the format of the leagues probably 8 years ago, it was really designed to give that excitement across not only the Premiership but our other divisions, but having key moments that every club's got something to play for as we go into the last round of fixtures. It works. I know it was controversial to begin with, and the traditionalists maybe didn't quite like the concept of splits and playoffs and stuff like that, but now that it's firmly embedded, it's such a valuable way to operate, and it's something that's discussed quite a lot across Europe about what is the best format and what's the best size of your divisions. It's something that we always keep an eye on and discuss with colleagues across Europe, just to ensure that we maximise those important games and the interest for all the clubs.
I think in Scottish football, the same arguments are being discussed. I mean, whether a split is a good thing or not, you know, obviously what is really exciting in the Northern Irish Football League is that seventh place, that coveted seventh place, there is something to play for in the bottom half, because there's always been this discussion if teams are in the bottom half and they're not really in danger of going down, what have they really got to play for apart from maybe trying to finish up as high as possible? But in Northern Irish football, certainly in the Premiership at least, that seventh spot, there is something to play for, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was very much designed to give that team that's sitting 7th, 8th, 9th, that maybe isn't it at risk of relegation, giving them something to play for that last month of the season. We have to be mindful that we have to keep the fans interested. The last thing we want to have is a number of dead rubbers for those clubs and the attendance at games dwindling, because it's so important to them. So yeah, the European playoff is crucial for that. You might find some clubs here sitting in third or fourth would say, well, we've had a fantastic season, and then we're at risk of maybe not making Europe because of that. But look, the reality is, over the years, traditionally the highest ranked team are successful through the playoff system, but it's given that seventh club an opportunity and something to play for, so very positive.
We'll talk a little bit more about your involvement in the Northern Irish Football League later on in the show. I really wanted to set the tone of that, because I think it's a really interesting talking point, and also to discuss about the work that goes on behind the scenes there. But Stephen, it's great to have you on the show. Obviously, you've had a very decorated career in the Northern Irish Football League, and I really want to tap into a little bit about your own journey playing in the league and how your experiences and memories of the league have really kind of fulfilled and kind of been moving you into this opportunity of working within the Northern Irish Football League governing body. So my first question to you really off the beginning was, why did you want to kind of get into football in the beginning? What was your route in at the very start?
I suppose like a lot of young people, male or female, you get an interest in the sport. And look, football has been in my life from a very young age. And so you talked me up as if I was a player of some notoriety, not very much a field player, very much so. Had ambitions as a young player, was fortunate enough to play for a couple of years, probably at championship level, both at my hometown club at Larne and then later for Ballyclare. But the reality was I wasn't very good. But I always knew that sport was my passion, and I wanted to work in sport. And I've been fortunate for the last 20 years to be working in sport in general. But the last 10, I've been in the fortunate position to work for the Northern Football League and enjoy the journey and the progression over that decade.
And in terms of starting out, I mean, I don't know if you're like myself, but obviously my dad sort of got me into football. You know, he really kind of got me into following the likes of the Scottish game in particular. I mean, I'm an Aberdeen fan. My dad supports Rangers, but that's another story. But, you know, getting involved in talking about football from the very beginning and getting that experience of going to games and watching matches, it really gets you involved, doesn't it? I just wondered who in your family or along with yourself kind of got you involved at the start.
Well, probably slightly different that a lot of people will talk about the influence of fathers and uncles and going to games that way. But probably my initial driver was my sister, more from a playing perspective. I have an older sister who was very keen in football at a young age and at a time when really females weren't playing football. Unfortunately, because of that, she took a different direction and focused on hockey and became an international player for Ireland for a number of years. But that was probably my main influence as a young boy. And then really just through friends and family, enjoyed playing at youth level. One of my closest friends is the son of the legendary former Larne player Harry Rainey, and he would have dragged us along to Larne games in our early teens, and a group of friends just went from there. I then obviously played quite a bit at mostly at amateur level, granted. So the love was always there. Before then, I found an interest in coaching. So away from what I was doing at NIFL or in previous employment in sport. I got heavily involved in youth coaching to begin with, and then kind of stumbled into an assistant manager's role at Carrick Rangers in the Championship. Dragged along, kicking and streaming with again a lifelong friend and Gary Havren, who yourself and probably a lot of your listeners will know.
Yeah,
So
very much so.
he brought me along as his assistant manager at Carrick for 3 very enjoyable years at a very good club, and had great times there before we had just shy of 2 years then at Glentoran as Gary manager and myself as his number two. But that seems a lifetime ago. That was probably, I think we finished up there in 2018, and probably with various roles changing within NIFL, then very much my focus is now on the off-field operational stuff that I do now. And the days of standing on the sideline and getting involved that are long gone.
I was smiling when you were talking about Larne in the very beginning because it's a total contrast to what it is now. I mean, I've been to Inver Park this season and I want to give up once again. I always say this on my show when I mention Larne, a massive thanks to Gareth Clements in particular for showing me around Inver Park and allowing me to get involved following the game when they played Carrick Rangers earlier in October of the season. And it's just a fantastic club. They really have come a hell of a long way in such a short space of time and they really are trying to really upset the apple cart of Northern Irish people and take it away from the sort of traditionalist mentality that has been the Belfast clubs, particularly Linfield's case, been the dominant force in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, look, it's fantastic, and I do try to remain as neutral as possible. But the journey that they've been on has been hugely impressive with Kenny, Bruce leading the way, and Tiernan doing a fantastic job down there. I'm as a boy in the 90s, I probably got the tail end of the last reasonably successful for club at Larne whenever I was a young supporter. And then probably for the next 20 years, it was a very different scenario. It was on its knees at times, and some people behind the scenes, deserve a lot of credit for keeping the club afloat. But where it is now, from the 90s to where it is today, is chalk and cheese. And look, it's fantastic for the town, and I know the general supporter talks a lot about the investment and the money that's been pumped into it. But look, it's a fantastic model of how a club at Irish League level can operate. and the impact it can make in a reasonably sized town. And I think there's so much growth in our game if we can get that model replicated across particularly those big towns. You talk about the success of the clubs in Belfast and the demographics there, but say the impact that it has made in the town is fantastic.
It is absolutely remarkable. And I remember what you were saying there about some of the not so great years. It reminds me that as an Aberdeen fan, I've never seen my club win the Scottish Cup. And I was born in 91, and the last year we won it was 1990. And we won the League Cup in 2014, but we haven't had many other highlights really to be had. We've had European journeys, but not that many and not that long. So,
Yeah, and
yeah,
that's
very, very
it's the
remarkable.
hope that keeps us there, Grant.
No,
So maybe one day.
that maybe one day, that is very true. I don't think we'll win the Scottish Premiership in my lifetime, but you never know. I'm sure as a Larne supporter, you maybe didn't think that you would win the Northern Irish Premiership, and obviously they did so the last season, which was absolutely remarkable. And speaking of Larne, you mentioned obviously you were involved within the club. When you were starting out in your footballing journey, Stephen, did you have a position in mind that you wanted to sort of be confident in what you were? Did you see yourself being a defensive-minded player or an attacker? What was your sort of routine? Because I think you used to be a goalkeeper, if I'm correct.
Yeah, again, probably why I didn't last too long in the top end. Yeah, look, I was a goalkeeper as a young player. Probably was quite big for my age as a teenager. Played for the international under 16 team, things like that. Made debut quite young, but the reality was between not having the ability and probably the height and structure, I was never going to succeed at the top end of the game. After a bit of soul searching at about 21 and going through university and going away traveling, when I come back home from a year's traveling, I went and played amateur league as an outfield player with a group of friends and loved it and played various positions equally badly, but still loved the game. Before then, say coming back as a coach and back into the Irish League at Championship and then eventually into the Premiership. So.
Did you have any sort of inspirations to be a goalkeeper, looking at maybe TV or video footage or even players that were playing in the Northern Irish Football League in the time that you sort of looked up to? Did anybody inspire you?
Yeah, look, I suppose there's inspiration from a couple of different areas in football in general. A lot of Larne players and people from the town would be inspired by Jim Hagan, a local guy who travelled the world ultimately as a player, played for Birmingham in England and across the various countries in Europe, including Spain, where he was voted the Overseas Player of the Year, I think in the late 80s. So Jim was a big inspiration for a lot of young Larne people. Back in the day, in the probably late 80s and early 90s, Graham McConnell was viewed as a very top goalkeeper, someone who lived around the same area as myself. So there was always somebody to look up to from purely from a football perspective. But yeah, look, I'm not going to say that I had this fantastic career. I enjoyed it. I tried my best, and but I always knew that my strengths hopefully lay off the field and the journey that I was going to take and on a professional career path as opposed to on the pitch.
And in terms of starting out at Larne, there would have been certain other players that were involved in the team that would have maybe gone on to have good careers. I mean, who were the sort of teammates that you were playing with at that time?
Oh, you're now really testing me. We're going back into the 90s, Grant. And again, probably at a stage where the club wasn't in a great position. So some good, honest players, but I can't really recall too many jumping out. With some a lot of young players coming through who then went maybe a little bit further. I remember Larry McMahon, who then went on and played so well at Cliftonville, was an up-and-coming player. We played in teams where the likes of the legendary John McKinstry, who probably played about 40 years for Larne at the first team level, probably overstayed his welcome. Maybe he should have stuck to his golf, but he played for a long time. So there's people like that had a big influence and were very, very well received around the time.
And you look at Larne now. We talked a lot about Kenny and his involvement with the club, but the players that have come to Larne and obviously the success of them winning the league for the first time in their history last season, it is absolutely remarkable the rise that they've had from coming through the Championship and up. And you look at some of the players that have come into the club, they've just taken that club to a totally different height. They've really captured the imagination, as you said, of the town as well. And they really have made people actually look and take notice about what they're actually trying to do, because they've had some very notable results in Europe as well. I know they beat Aris, of course, of Denmark being a very good result. And I think if they had managed to overcome the Portuguese team, which unfortunately they didn't, they could have ended up playing Tottenham, which would have been quite unbelievable. I mean, could you imagine Spurs coming to Northern Ireland to play Larne? I mean, that would have been unbelievable. But I think the job that Tiernan Lynch has been doing has been utterly remarkable.
Yeah, and look, from a NIFL perspective, what is particularly pleasing is that it's now raising the game of others. You know, for so long, you know, Linfield have been leading the way, and they still do. They're very much in the title hunt this year. But in terms of the operations of a club and the professionalism that has now been introduced, the clubs are looking at each other saying, "Well, how can we get to that level?" And some of them are really picking the game, and that's the excitement and the opportunity that they exist. That there's three or four clubs that are now really pushing on, and for us creating a real football industry in the country, and that can only be a positive. So it's not just Larne. You know, you will see that Larne, Linfield, Glentoran have got moved full time. We have Crusaders and Cliftonville working day and night to start to achieve that, and the others are following suit. We have investment coming in from the likes of Coleraine and Carrick Rangers. So these are all kind of the outputs of some of that work. Mm-hmm. So it's very much not one club. There's now a bit of momentum where a lot of them are trying to push into that top end. And I think for us, the next stage is getting that qualification into group stage of the Conference League, and that is absolutely achievable. Linfield were so close a couple of years ago. It was heartbreaking being at the game, just seeing how close it was and the circumstances of an OG and going out in penalties whenever they really had the opposition on the ropes. So look, the hope is there, and that's something that we look forward to in the next hopefully couple of years.
And you talk obviously about filtering down the leagues as well. I mean, you're looking at the Championship, the likes of Portadown looking like they're on their way back to the Premiership as we're recording this on the 4th of April. You know, you'll also look at Bangor, the story of them coming up from the PIL and doing very well and really kind of having an excellent season back in the Championship. And, you know, you mentioned one of your other clubs, Ballyclare, doing a lot of excellent stuff off the pitch. I believe they're getting a new 4G surface at Dixon Park. And I think it's absolutely magnificent to see these clubs not just standing still. And I think Larne have changed maybe the rhetoric of Northern Irish football, as well as obviously their own, because obviously they've got to think about themselves as well to a large extent. But they've really kind of given people a little bit of incentive to say, well, you're going to have to do this, otherwise you're going to fall further and further behind.
Yeah, I think there's a number of factors, Grant. There's increased investment going into it, whether that be through grants or through some capital or some businessmen putting some money in. There are good people coming back into football. We talk internally that, you know, maybe even during the Troubles, we lost some good people with that probably disconnected from football. And then there's more and more business savvy people come and get involved and seeing the opportunities that are out there. You mentioned Bangor and how they are starting to move through the divisions, and they're challenging the top end of the Championship. You know, probably 6-8 years ago, again, a club on its knees have brought in some really forward thinking people on their board, and they're really galvanizing the town of Bangor, and we can see that in the attendance and the success they're getting on the pitch. Portadown are the same, had to go through a bit of a recess, fresh blood within the board and really kicking on. The Championship is so exciting. You mentioned that Portadown, yes, are probably favourites as we stand here this evening, but Five more games to go. It's going to be tight. There's going to be twists and turns. They've caught up. They were a little bit behind and had a little bit of a bump. They seem to have momentum, but the championship, who knows what happens.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that the championship has been really excellent. And I mentioned Ballyclare, they are a really great club that's doing a lot of work off the pitch. I know Stephen Small has been very investing in trying to get that club back up to the top echelons of that league. And obviously, you were involved at the club for a period of time in your career. I mean, what does Ballyclare mean to you?
Yeah, some good memories. Again, I'll not over egg my involvement. I do have a laugh sometimes with the chairman, James E. Kirk, who's come in this year as the new chairman, after Trevor McCann being there probably back whenever I was playing for the couple of years that I was there. But James E. was the midfield general whenever I was playing. He was probably 45 then, so maybe that tells you how old he is now. But we have a good chuckle, and I'm glad to say they're in a better place now than certainly whenever they had me in nets for them for a couple of years. That's for sure. But again, a club that's doing a lot of good stuff off the pitch. You mentioned they're drawn down some investment to put down a 3G, and I know that can be quite controversial. And again, in the traditionalists around the number of 3G surfaces that we have in our divisions, but the reality is it's so important for some of our clubs to grow and be that hub for their local community, and that's what's going to happen at Ballyclare.
I'm glad you said 3G there because I think I mentioned 4G in my other discussion, so I do apologise. I can't really work out what the difference is between 3G and 4G. I'm not an expert in that
I would
field,
say it's
so
just a little bit of marketing, Grant. They're one and the same thing, and I'm probably a bit old school. I don't call it Astro, I'll call it 3G.
if anybody wants to elaborate to me what the difference between a 3G to 4G surface, do message me at Cam Footballs on Twitter. I do think, or what do we call it, X these days. You could just call me out on that. You also played at Newry for a wee period of time, Stephen, and they're a club that's obviously not having the greatest of time at the moment. Obviously, we want to wish again Barry Gray all the best in his battle with treatment for cancer. Not great to hear what's happening there at Newry at the moment. They're obviously in a bit of a relegation battle, but they're another club that's really synonymous with the Irish League, aren't they? And you've obviously had some experience of being involved with that.
Yeah, again, a club who have risen from the ashes, from 10 or 12 years ago. A lot of really good people behind the scenes, and their journey through the divisions to return to the Premiership is hugely impressive. But it's difficult. Once you get into the Premiership, it's really that battle to try and stay in and solidify your position. And I think that's what Carrick have done ever so well over the last 2 or 3 years. Newry are still in with a fighting chance, and no better man to do it than Barry Gray, who, as you've mentioned, is facing his own personal battles, and like there's no stronger man to battle that, and certainly wish Barry all his best in his recovery. I know that he's going through a difficult period, but self and the staff within NIFL and the general Irish supporter are very much have his health in our thoughts at the minute. But yeah, look, they are resilient. They've shown they've been able to bounce back from going into administration, and have come back in. They certainly offer value within the Premiership or Championship as another big town or city, so to speak, as they are. It's going to be interesting between them and Ballymena. I know there's some nervous people, including Mr. Coleman in our office, over the next few months. So he's very negative on a good day. So you can just imagine what he's been like most of this season with the guys in Ballymena.
Well, I'd love to take a trip to Ballymena next season. I've never been up there yet. It's on my bucket list to do, as is Newry, because I'm very much connected with Gareth McCullough, previous guest of the show. And I think if you want to go back to listen to my chat with Gareth, please do so, because it's a really good in-depth chat about his lifelong memories of following Newry City and the journey that they've been on. I think has been quite remarkable. Stephen, you've obviously done your fair share of coaching as well. Where did you find out in your journey as a player that you said, right, it's not kind of happening for me as a player? I want to try and keep myself involved in the game, and I think coaching might be my avenue. Was that fairly early on?
It was in a sense that I went to uni very much with the intention to become a PE teacher. So sport and coaching was always of interest. I probably then got persuaded away from the teaching aspect when I got offered employment through local council and being a sports development officer, again with quite a lot of coaching involvement there. But it really did start to hit home in probably my mid-20s, where I had a fairly bad leg break, and had one of those fancy cages put on, and I was in that cage for 10 or 11 months, and so a lot of soul searching around playing and coaching, and I was actively coaching with the cage on, and that's really where I fell in love with coaching, and again going back to that concept of wanting to become a teacher. But my coaching interest really was around youth football and trying to develop young players. And I started out back home in Larne with some of the youth teams in my mid to late 20s. And then it probably evolved into that journey to the Irish League as the number two under Gary at Carrick Rangers. I laugh because it was never my intention to do senior adult football. It just didn't particularly interest me. Gary got the job at Carrick Rangers, and the way it was in season, and they had a couple of free weeks because they were knocked out of cups or whatever. And for 2 weeks, I said no, with no interest. So he arranged a friendly, and I went to watch him, and he was pretty much there on his own. So I felt bad and joined him at Carrick, and I agreed to do it to the end of the season, and then that. 2.5 years later, we were still there, and we had some great times, good successes. But yeah, it was more to support him and his journey where he wanted to go in the professional game, and he's obviously involved as the coach down at Larne at the minute. But it was never a burning ambition of mine to be on the sideline in the Irish League. Say my interest is more around youth development and young footballers.
And when people are in a part-time environment and football is not their sort of livelihood, do they have to try and think of ways to make sure they're earning a sustainable income to make sure that they're paying their bills and stuff like that? And I in some of my older episodes of the show, it was quite interesting to sort of hear some players that have had to do certain things or do university qualifications or other things to kind of keep themselves involved in other things because you just don't know what happens either side of football when you have a long-term injury or whether you're coming towards the end of your career and planning to retire. And I always ask people, what do they do when they want to finish in the game? And it's always very interesting to see where people decide to go next because not everybody could go into coaching. Not everybody could be a football pundit. You know, there's a lot of very good pundits on BBC Sport Northern Ireland, and there's obviously some very good coaches in the game, of which Gary Haveron you've mentioned, and I'll come on to Gary in a moment. But I just think it's very fascinating to see how people's directions are set from fairly early on as to what they want to do. And as somebody myself who's never been kind of a football coach or anything else, but I have a vast interest in football. My life is in academia, and I've always been very much involved with that. And I think that has sort of set my own life. And I think would I be a different person if I moved to working in football? Absolutely, I'd be a totally different person. But I think it's shaped my life in a very good way, and I can look at this quite objectively.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I suppose now with three or four full-time clubs, we have people who are full-time employed, and football is their only job in the Irish League. That hasn't been the case for a very long time. Personally, I've always kind of had a 9-to-5 job, and then the coaching came on top of that. So it was about trying to juggle probably your energy as much as anything, and also having a fairly understanding wife who didn't mind or probably wanted me to be out. Most evenings was happy enough. So like it was really difficult on a personal level to try and juggle whenever I was, it was 9-to-5 in the office at Niffl, and then 3 nights and maybe 4 nights if you're going out watching games as a number two at Carrick and then Glentoran. But those days are long gone for me, and it is only Niffl is my only involvement. I'm in an unfortunate position now. Whenever I do coach, it's with my son's teams, and I use that nearly as an opportunity to get away from the laptop and the phone and use it quite selfishly to take a bit of a breather. But I'm very fortunate to be working on football, but there at times there can be too much football because of that. But I say I'm very fortunate. For 20 years I've been working in sport, and the last 10 of them and it's been in my number one sport in football. But I've had plenty of other job opportunities and experiences that you just have to juggle as much as possible.
I think we have to talk about Gary here for, because I started following the Northern Irish League in about 2014, 15. And that kind of coincides with when you sort of first started at the Northern Irish Football League, which is quite an interesting little part of the story. And obviously, Gary was very much involved at Carrick. And I've had Gary on the show in the past, and he's come across really, really well. And he talks so vividly about the Carrick memories in particular. And what was it like working with Gary? And what kind of a person is he to work with?
I'd be interested to know how long your podcast was with Gary, because if anybody can
I
talk,
can find out while you reply.
I'm sure it probably went into the small hours of the night. But look, Gary and I have been lifelong friends. Going back to the first day in primary school, we've been stuck together. Went through both primary and secondary school. So look, and he was the best man at my wedding. So we're very close on a personal level. So working with him was quite natural in one sense. As you probably understand, he's quite a dominating character and likes to take center stage, where I'm very much the opposite, and I'm happy to be the quiet number two. So I think it worked along a lot of ways. And while Gary's very headstrong and knows what he wants, I'm maybe one of the few that he would maybe listen to, and whenever he gets some home truth. So it was a great journey, because certainly at Carrick we had great times. We had success on the pitch. We created a really good kind of environment for the team, and people who we probably have stayed in touch with as friends for a long time, due to that, because the camaraderie. Once we moved over to Glentoran, it was a very different kind of animal. A club at Carrick, where we had the autonomy to do what we wanted, because the club was kind of quite small in terms of support and staff, and then they just really needed somebody like Gary to take it and drive with it. When we moved to Glentoran, it's a much bigger operation, huge expectations, but the reality, financially, the club was in a dire state. We were probably at a tricky position where we couldn't quite say what we felt and the reality behind the scenes. We had to be respectful of the board and the position they were in. But I don't think that helped whenever we struggled on the pitch. And ultimately, we just didn't have a pretty strong team, because we couldn't finance getting that next level. Much to the frustration of the fans, and it was disappointing, because I don't think they got to see the best of Gary Heavering as a manager
Yes, I'd
and
agree.
the circumstances. But look, it was an opportunity we couldn't turn down. Probably the timing just wasn't ideal, but at that stage we were probably both in our early 30s, and to get that opportunity was fantastic. But just didn't quite work out, and it showed over the next number of appointments that people were in the same position, and nothing was really changing until there was the takeover and investment. So
I was having a look at the length of that podcast before we were chatting about that. It was just over an hour, that chat with Gary.
it
That
must have
was
been heavily edited, because there's not a chance that he only did. You get any questions in at all, or was it just?
I got my fair share, and I even managed to mention Miguel Chines in the discussion, because that has to be mentioned with that late winner against Balmamallard that kept Carrick up that season. Remarkable.
Yeah, it's something that you have to be there or see it to believe it, because it was fairy tale stuff. I think going into the 90th minute, we were 1-0 down and pretty much relegated. I think it was Mark Serginer possibly equalised
Yep, it
with
was
a
indeed.
header, and then an overhead kick in the 95th minute or something, while just down the road, we mentioned it before, Barry Gray's Warren Point. Got a decision, one of the worst decisions I've probably ever seen in football, went against them to our benefit. But Yeah, good times. And certainly Gary, I always remember it, and certainly Miguel will make sure and remind us as well.
It's definitely a screening moment, that's for sure. But Carrick as a club, really, since then, staying in the league, they have been quite a remarkable side, haven't they? I mean, they've had a couple of different managers. Neil Curry's obviously come in and done very well with that club. And Stuart King is doing a very good job, isn't he, at the moment with making Carrick, obviously getting some investment from Michael Smith as well. You know, they're a club that's really trying to kind of get into and fight into that top six. And Stuart himself as a manager, he's just obviously starting out, but he's doing a very solid job, isn't he?
He is, and I think there's probably some similarities in terms of with him and Gary and how they motivate and hard on the sleeve type character. I think obviously Gary's got a bit more experience and maybe say a little bit more mellowed now, but Stuart certainly is a motivator and has done a fantastic job. You mentioned earlier on the journey that Larne have been on. I think Carrick have been on something similar. Whenever I was there as the assistant manager. Michael Hughes, legendary Northern Ireland player, was the owner. But you know the finances weren't there to really to kick on. Michael and David Hilditch, who again unfortunately is no longer with us, were really driving the club and were a great support. Peter Clark then came in as the chairman just as we were leaving, and has made a fantastic impact on the club in terms of solidifying and building a really strong base. And as you say, now with the investment, there's a real opportunity to kick on. So it's great to see a lot of good people behind the scenes at Carrick. And again, another big town has got potential to really grow.
Another club I want to tick off the list next season. And Stuart, if you're listening, I'm definitely coming to Carrickfergus next season. Hopefully, you'll be still in the dugout next season because that would make it very, very exciting for me to come up. You mentioned the Glens there, obviously, such a huge club. Been a very disappointing season for Glenshorn, and obviously, they've lost Warren Feeney. Declan Devine is currently in as we're recording this podcast. I mean, Northern Irish football needs a strong Glentoran is the phrase I've heard from so many commentators in Northern Irish football, particularly Liam Beckett, who has mentioned that on quite a few occasions. I think, you know, Stephen Craig has mentioned that before. But it is a true saying, isn't it? Because you look at the Belfast quartet, Linfield have been so dominant, Crusaders have had their title successes as well in their runs in Europe. Cliftonville have had their title successes, and they're obviously going very well under Jim McGill. But Glentoran have not really had massive amounts of success in recent times. Yes, they won the Irish Cup during COVID, but you know, they haven't won the league since 2009, and they really need to be getting back to the top of the Northern Irish football again, don't they, Stevie?
They do, and again, the potential in the club is huge. And every time that they kind of threaten to get sustained success and be the top end of the club, they come out in their droves, and it's fantastic to see. So look, the hope is that they do pick up and they push themselves forward. Things like the Oval and the history is unreal as a club, but it shows really one of the challenges that we have within the league in terms of the facilities that we have. And the reason why I moved into NIFL 10 years ago was largely around the investment that was due to come from the government. In a previous life, I worked and did similar project work in amateur boxing where there was investment going into the clubs to try and really improve facilities and the standards. And that was what that drove me to NIFL, the 36 million that was promised by the government 12 years ago. And I think there's renewed optimism that that is likely to be rolled out in the not too distant future. So clubs like Glentoran and many others, unfortunately, in the Irish League need that investment, and I think that's going to be one of the key drivers for the next steps that of the journey of NIFL and hopefully the improvement.
It is frustrating, isn't it? Because I mean, I've obviously been to the Oval, and you know, it is a classic ground, but it definitely needs some TLC, shall we say, and it does need some improvements there. And obviously, Solitude is in a very similar position. But these grounds, they have character. But you know, as you say, these if the league and the clubs want to keep developing, you have to have some facilities that are going to really sort of push things on further down the line, don't they? I mean, obviously, Coleraine have had some investment, and obviously, they managed to get their new 4G surface in. You know, lots of other clubs are doing their bit. Obviously, Dungannon have done some great stuff as well. But you know, you're absolutely right. I think it's important to see this work happening off the pitch as well. And Niffl could only do so much. And as you say, you need some help from the powers that be at higher up the tree. And it can be frustrating when things don't get pushed through.
Yeah, look, Grant, the last probably 6 months, myself and Gerard as the CEO have been lobbying so hard behind the scenes. We have numbers of meetings with government officials. We had the UK sports minister over last month, the new minister here in Northern Ireland. We've had one-to-ones, really trying to drive home that message because it's just not good enough. Our fans deserve better. The clubs deserve better because we've shown the impact that our clubs are making in the community, whether that is just as a general supporter or the programs they run for the wider local community. The impact is going to be huge. We just need the money rolled out as soon as possible. You mentioned Cliftonville. You know, they're sold out every home game in their home support. They're so restricted because of the facility they have,
Absolutely.
and the potential for that club to go to a different level with that type of investment is going to be huge. You've mentioned Coleraine. I could go through every club in the Irish League and would have a similar impact with the right investment. But we are hopeful that it's on its way. Civil servants are doing a lot of work behind the scenes in terms of building up the case for additional money. So because the 36 million that was earmarked or ring-fenced 12 years ago won't cut it. It won't
No.
have the impact that the original investment was going to have.
You probably
So
need to add another zero onto that, probably.
yeah, look, absolutely. And we have now the stats and the data to back that up. We've spent the last 12 months working with the Department for Communities and alongside the clubs to go through and survey what is the actual need and what are the finances required to deliver that. So we are optimistic, and that's why we believe in the next 5 years through the strategy that Gerard mentioned on your pod a number of months ago. There's real opportunity for us to take domestic football to a different level.
Now, obviously, getting involved in the Northern Irish Football League, Stephen, I mean, it takes somebody with real character, I think, to obviously has been involved playing in the game in Northern Ireland to suddenly say, I want to actually give something back to the game. I want to actually be involved in an organisation that is shaping the future of football in Northern Ireland. I mean, you know, getting involved in that in the beginning, what did it feel like for you starting out and obviously getting to work with people like Neil and obviously Gerard more recently? But just getting involved, and how have you seen the development of football in Northern Ireland since you started over a decade ago, or around a decade ago, I should
Well,
say?
look, again, I was very fortunate to get into this type of position, because there aren't too many positions like this in Northern Ireland. So when it came up, it was something that interested me both on a personal and a professional level. I think what we have now within the staff team at Niffl are a number of highly motivated and capable people who are going to drive the game forward. Gerard's come in as CEO probably just less than 2 years ago now, and you have somebody who is steeped in the game, and his only interest is developing Irish League football, nothing else. And it's great to see that motivation. That's something that as a staff we kind of all kind of thrive off. You've mentioned Neil there again, just somebody who lives and breathes it. We have that now within the staff and structure. People who are super committed, wanting to make a difference. It's not just a case of sitting in the office 9 to 5 and clocking out. There's a real passion, but also a real skill set to try and take things forward. Last year we brought in a new head of commercial. To try and help on that side of things and prove how we market the league and develop the partners that we have. So we're trending in the right direction. There's plenty more to do, and it's just exciting times to try and make a real difference, and that's ultimately what we're all trying to do.
I always feel a good organisation and a very successful organisation needs good people around it. And I think Gerard Lawler has really kind of had this vision since he's come into the role as the CEO, and I think he's painted a very ambitious picture, but I think he's painted a picture that I think is very opportunist, and I think there's got to be a lot of positivity about it. And I don't know what you think, but I think there's you've got to think glass half full, because you know if you want to develop in similar ways that Scottish football needs to develop, in the same ways that other some of the bigger leagues across Europe have got to get involved. You know, every league is developing worldwide, and you know, if you keep standing still, you're going to fall further and further behind.
Yeah, and that's one thing Gerard won't let happen. He likes to keep things moving. He is really willing to push. Sometimes it's viewed as being controversial, but it's certainly the drive that we're trying to make is just around professionalism. Professionalism as us as staff, and look, at times we don't get everything right, but it's not the lack of trying. We are super committed, and we're trying to support our clubs in that drive for professionalism. Particularly off the pitch, I think that's going to be huge in the next number of years how we operate. But the staff all around us, we are quite a small number. There's seven of us in the office. I'm supported fantastically with by Sophie Glendinning, and Ian and Neil have their staff as well. That and we're all pushing in the right direction, and we're very fortunate that we do go in to the office every day motivated, happy to be there, and that's not always the case for a lot of people. So we are fortunate, but we're only as strong as our clubs, and they're the ones that are going to take the Irish League to the next level.
I think somebody who deserves a mention in here are the guys that you have in your team is David Kerr, who's been doing some fantastic work in highlighting the league. And I think obviously he had some previous experience at Glentoran and done some fantastic video work. But I know he's been very good in trying to get people like Sam North to come and highlight the league as well. And a lot of his work with the Footy Adventure stuff sees it from a more outside of the league point of view. But I do think that David has been a really valuable addition to the team as well. So I just wanted to mention him.
No, and absolutely be remiss of me to not mention that David is worth his absolute weight in gold. Great guy. But the stuff, the content that he is producing and the reach that he has developed, and bear in mind, David's probably only been in with us for the last couple of years, and he's got so many ideas. The amount of games that he's out at, we have to try and keep a check on him from an HR perspective at times, because we're dead, like, David, you're not scheduled to be out of that game, but again, just lives and breathes it. And he has really helped us get the game out to a different audience, probably an audience much younger than you and I, Grant. But the stuff that he's doing on the digital has been so well received. But alongside that, he's also got some people helping him out behind the scenes as well. Because we're doing more and more outside of the Premiership. Not as much as we'd wish, but there's always limitations on budget and how much we can deliver. But we've never produced more for the Championship and our PIL. And on Sunday, we kickstart our women's operations as well, where we have a preliminary round of the Women's League Cup starting on Sunday. So it's all systems go, and David and the guys there are doing a fantastic job.
I love the way you said a younger audience than me, thinking that I must be in my 40s or something. I'm 32, but I understand what you are talking
No.
about.
You mentioned earlier on, so I did look. Well, I'm in my 40s, you're in your 30s, but there's been big uptake in those teenagers, and that's one of the things.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm
Again,
only having a laugh.
so don't take it any offense there. I was
None
being
taken whatsoever.
very
No, it's always a good laugh when people think that it's people younger than me. I keep forgetting that I'm getting older. Just the way of life, I suppose. Talk to me about a kind of working week for you, Stevie, because you know, in your role at NIFL, I'd imagine it's quite fluid. I imagine it's quite engaging, but I imagine it could be quite demanding too.
Yeah, it probably it never stops. You're from my role, because it's so operational, and because our clubs, the high percentage of our clubs are still driven by volunteers who maybe have their own 9 to 5. So trying to get that balance, can be a challenge, and that's probably one of the things that Gerard has tried to introduce a little bit more whenever he came in as CEO, was just trying to make sure that we have the energy to do everything that we do. But ultimately, I'm in the office Monday to Friday and then on call over the weekends. Saturday is match day, is the big business day of our week. So we have to be available to support the clubs. And more often than not, as a staff, we'll be out at games as well, just to pop in to say hello to the clubs. More often than not, you get grief whenever you don't really need it, but it's good to go around and see. I try to get out quite a lot to the Championship and PIL on a Saturday. I'll maybe grab a Premiership game on a Friday night, but it's actually not that important for us to be at games. It's just being available at the end of the phone, whether that's to take a query on a match day, to look at issues around administration and team sheets, all that sort of stuff. So I do pretty much keep my I'm in the office during the week. We'll probably have at least one, maybe two evening meetings most weeks, just with our committees. So yeah, it's pretty full on, but it's enjoyable, because we get so much back from our club people. I think we've got really strong relationships there. Yes, at times we have some challenges whenever we make decisions they don't agree with, but that's part and parcel of certainly my role as the CEO.
And never a dull moment, as is the phrase that I like to use, because the football in Northern Ireland, just in general, is never dull. And obviously, we're obviously tasked very recently with putting the fixtures out for the split, and I'd imagine you have to do that at the start of the season as well. It's a very exciting time, isn't it, when it's the start of a new season, fixtures come out, you're looking for your team to see whether you're going to be at home on the first weekend or whether you got a really awful away game. As an Aberdeen fan, I know that very well, because we usually end up away at Celtic or Rangers on the opening weekend, but that's another story. But it must be quite exciting for you to be the person responsible for, ooh, I actually have the opening round of fixtures and I can send this out. That must be quite cool, actually.
I'm not too sure exciting would be the word that I would use. I think it's exciting for the fans, exciting for the clubs waiting for it. From my end, it's fairly stressful, because it just takes one mistake to knock things off, and then you're criticised. So we do spend a lot of time trying to make sure that everything is right. In terms of the fixtures, I've already started the plans for next season. We engage with a third party company for independence and expertise in terms of developing a fixture schedule, building in a range of constraints, including obviously the homes and aways, but different things to try and maximize the interest and get games played at the right time of the year. So it's stressful. I'll admit that, Grant. On
Yeah, fair enough. I agree with that point of view, but
even on Tuesday night, where we were waiting on the results of two fixtures to confirm the splits, but there were five different permutations there that could happen. So it's just making sure we have every eventuality mapped out.
yeah.
So on. To give you a flavor of what it looks like, we were in on the Saturday before because we thought it could happen, but we're all around the table just checking absolutely everything. So I'm responsible for the actual fixtures, hand it over to Neil for the communications, hand it back to David for the external socials, cross check everything, make sure it gets out there, and lo and behold, there'll be a typo or a mistake somewhere, but we try and reduce that as much as possible.
Because this is it. I mean, there was Carrick Rangers. They still had a mathematical chance of getting in the top six. Now, albeit it was extremely unlikely, almost virtually impossible, them beating Linfield 5-0. But nevertheless, it was a permutation. And imagine if that happened and you hadn't done the prep work for it. I mean, the one thing that reminds me of that in a very interesting breath is when Barcelona came back from, what was it, 5-1 down on aggregate to beat Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League. I think everybody wrote Barcelona off, and they ended up turning that tie around and won 6-1 on the night. It was quite extraordinary.
Yeah, well, again, to give you that example, Carrick could have finished sixth, seventh, or eighth on Tuesday night. Yes, the sixth was probably extreme. They had the win 5-0, but With that, then it knocks on what the formula looks like for everyone. So yeah, we just have to look at it all. Thankfully, it was just the Premiership to do on Tuesday. Last year, we had Premiership and Championship were confirmed both in the on the same time. So it's interesting. You probably don't want to be in the office and listen to some of the language being used whenever we're going through it, but. Let's say we're probably a little bit more relaxed today than we certainly were on
I bet you
Tuesday
are.
and Wednesday. Yeah,
As
because
a scientific and academic geek myself, I just find those sorts of things quite extraordinary. Like, who is going to be where 1 week to the next? You know, maybe that's just me talking and maybe not seeing it from your point of view, because you're obviously doing this sort of stuff. But I just think it's quite extraordinary to see the different kind of emotions when it when things are being like that, because I
and
just
I
think it's
think
quite fantastic.
some of the feedback we get, you know. Understandably, the clubs will come back and criticize on their individual issue without maybe taking into the consideration the bigger picture and how one change can impact four or five different clubs and things like that. So look, we have our challenges. We try to communicate as best we can with our clubs and explain what we're trying to achieve. But particularly managers want to have the easiest run or the smoothest run and the most recovery time. Things that really suit them, but we also have to think big picture, commercial, broadcast, all that has to be put into the mix, Grant. So it can be a fun puzzle to pick through.
And you're obviously getting involvement with lots of written press as well, and obviously the media as well. I'm taking it as well. And what's it like sort of dealing with those guys? I mean, we talked a lot about dealing with certain players and fans now and again, and managers. But what's it like working with and kind of talking to the media for things like this?
Yeah, well, I suppose me personally, I probably deal mostly around the broadcast purely on the operational side of things, when certain fixtures can be played and how can we make it work for BBC Sport NI or Sky on occasion, which can be tricky. The general conversations with print media and would go through Neil and Jared particularly. As I mentioned earlier on, whenever I was on the sidelines, I was happy to be the quieter one in the background trying to get on with his job. So that's kind of the same in the office where I don't need to be seen or heard. Let me just get on with it and let the other guys do the talking to
Fair enough,
the
fair enough. That's a very acceptable
media.
answer.
So the
I like
fact that you've got me on here tonight is something different for me. So.
that. No, that's a fair question. I just it's just interesting for me to see the different dynamics, I guess. And obviously one of the things that really excites me from Scotland is obviously the greater broadcasting and involvement that Northern Irish football is getting. You know, obviously BBC Sport Northern Ireland have really try to push this on, certainly helped in some respects by the COVID pandemic, but they really are trying to motor that along. And you know, Sky have taken an interest as well, and you're seeing the different range of podcasts that are kind of taking up the game, in particular Michael Clarke's The Score Northern Ireland, which I always see as the benchmark show for football and content in your country. But I think from my side, looking at it objectively here, I think it's important that you know, everybody sees some of the connectivity that goes about and maybe how some of these relationships are formed and developed, because I think it a strong sort of network can really push things along quite nicely. And it does seem incrementally that Northern Irish football is definitely gaining some traction.
Yeah, I think we are fortunate, but it's not by mistake. We've worked hard in developing those relationships, whether that be the broadcast and the streaming opportunity that arose out of COVID, and we were very fortunate in developing that relationship with BBC, along with Sky, as you mentioned. But again, the interest, the fact that your podcast, Michael's work, is going out there. It all connects perfectly and raising the interest and we're very fortunate there are people out there with a genuine interest, but it's not just it's being done because there's other people want to see what's going on and challenge. You mentioned Scotland we're probably jealous of the financial figures that the likes of their broadcast do, and that's probably one of the things that we were trying to push ourselves, trying to be commercially better and develop on that aspect. But we have a lot of conversations with our fellow colleagues across Europe and around how they operate. We're active members of the European Leagues Association, so we take lots of guidance and we look at best practice across the board. So we speak to our colleagues in SBFL. Bizarrely, we've probably never had a better relationship than with our colleagues in the League of Ireland. Probably 2 or 3 years ago, there was very little communication between the two, but now we're speaking most weeks, and that's just because we're all facing the same challenges, and it's figuring out, well, how did yous do that, or how can we learn off yous, or vice versa.
I mean, I went to a League of Ireland game on my last visit, actually. I went to Derry City against Waterford. It was my first trip up to Londonderry, or Derry, what they call it that. And I just thought it was a very different kind of product. What I think of the Northern Irish Football League, and this is just from my snapshot of following a select number of games I've been at now, is I feel that the Northern Irish League is very hustle and bustle. There's a lot of kind of, I wouldn't say untidiness, but it definitely feels like there's a lot more battling qualities in that league that really kind of shines through. And there is a lot of quality as well, of course, but there really is a lot of hard graft that goes on. In the League of Ireland, it's very different style. There's a lot of playing out from the back. There's a lot of possession-based football, I think, but it's still very much captivated a different way. And I think what the League of Ireland have done very well is they've tried to market their things on this League of Ireland television subscription service. I don't follow a lot of their service, but I do watch a lot of the highlights on YouTube, and I think the work that they're doing is absolutely fantastic, and I think the product that they're doing is great. Now, there are obviously some caveats, and there is some work that they also need to do. But I think you mentioned obviously Scottish football there, and I think Scottish football has done well to a large extent. But I also think it is constrained a little bit by the fact that Sky, in my opinion, don't particularly highlight the Scottish game in a way that I think they could do. I think they should be doing it better. They obviously like to highlight Celtic and Rangers because they are the two biggest clubs in Scottish football. I get all that, but there are more clubs in the Scottish Premiership in particular than just Celtic and Rangers. But what the BBC have done is they've taken the Championship and they've really marketed that very well. And I think on the flip side, they've done very well to really highlight that aspect. So I guess for this sort of thing, Stephen, it's all about tailoring it to an audience that's going to get people involved. And people talk about the local game in Northern Ireland. I call it the domestic game here, but it's a different kettle of fish. But I think just trying to support your own league and really see it growing, I think has got to be the way forward, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the frustrations that we have, that there is something special on your doorstep. That was a benefit of COVID, where people couldn't travel to get across, with the greatest respect, to Scotland or to England to go and watch Aberdeen.
Believe me, you don't want to come and watch Aberdeen this season.
I had the pleasure of Hearts last year, went over for a visit.
But Tynecastle's a good ground, to be fair. I'll give you
But
that one.
again,
That was a
as you mentioned, it's so focused on Rangers and Celtic, and then you don't realise the big clubs outside of Glasgow. But I think whenever we started the broadcast deal with BBC Sport NI, they used it nearly as a test, and it's now being replicated, as you mentioned, across the rest of the UK at different levels of football. The Championship in Scotland, they've seen the impact that it can make and getting streams out. So we're probably proud of leading the way, and I know certainly Neil Britton and BBC Sport Northern Ireland kind of has been using that test case of saying, yep, this can be done. So it's all positive from our end. It really has driven the visibility. What our clubs want to see now is, can we maximize that from a commercial perspective?
Very much so. And I think this has been a really captivating chat, Stephen, just to learn a little bit more about what you're doing in the Northern Irish Football League, but also the connectivity that is going on. And this really kind of follows up quite nicely my chat with Gerard Lawler that I had. And if you haven't listened to my chat with Gerard in this Campbell's Footballs podcast, go back and have a look through the archives, because I think it's a really captivating chat about not just Gerard's role, but also the future and the sort of kind of vision that Northern Irish football wants to go in the next few years. And that kind of leads to my last question to you, Stevie. What's your sort of feeling for you and Northern Irish football? What's your sort of crystal ball seeing for the next sort of 10 years of Northern Irish football? Because you've been involved a decade or so now, and you've obviously seen it grow so far, but there's obviously still a lot of work to do. And do we think it's going to be even greater in the next decade? I mean, really interested to see where you think the league might go in the next decade.
Yeah, well, look, it still excites me. Say I've been fortunate to be in the position that I am, But I think there's further growth. I'm somebody who, on a professional level, is all around development and improvement. And I wouldn't be at the league if I didn't have faith that there's other levels to go to. So I think once we start the rollout of the government funding, that's going to assist with our club development. I think there's huge scope to improve the youth and academy level football in Northern Ireland, and it's something that we're working on behind the scenes with the association. And I think that's going to be key. You mentioned earlier on where Gerard had talked around professionalism and made some bold statements, but there is an opportunity to have professionalism within our youth academy level, where there's going to be employment opportunities, there's going to be an opportunity for young players to be operating at a full-time level. So those are a couple of the key things that I think are going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years that give us an opportunity to kick it on. And probably the last bit is that qualification into European football at group stage. And for that to happen, we have to sit down with our clubs to see how can we best support them? When can they be better prepared? Does that look like a tweak in the season or a change in our playing calendar? Those are the big conversations that are going to happen in the next number of years. And once we bottom those out, then I think there's real scope for the next level.
Yeah, very much so, Stephen. It's going to be very interesting to see what the Northern Irish Football League does in the next wee while, and also your continued work, which I don't think goes on notice. I think you guys are doing a fabulous job to highlight the league, and it's been really great for me to have you on the show to hear about what you've been doing and also what NIFL is doing behind the scenes as well, because I think it's a tough test and it's a tough job at times, but I also think it's a rewarding job, and I think you guys are doing a magnificent job. So thanks very much for coming on the Campbell's Footballs podcast to share your own story in the game so far and also the development within NIFL. So thanks very much for your time, Stevie.
You're very welcome, Graham. Thanks for having me.
Well, listener, that brings us to the end of yet another episode of Campbell's Footballs. I hope this podcast was just what the doctor ordered. If you want to listen to previous shows or look out for future shows, follow Campbell's Footballs on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to other podcasts. You can also follow the show on Facebook at Campbell's Footballs. Search for me, StatoG91, or Instagram, or other social media channels. But until then, until next time, I hope you enjoyed the crack and enjoy Campbell's Footballs. What a dangerous night.